listen to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting it, passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
I have all these things I want to talk to you about, but that are actually like things I'm not quite ready to say publicly yet.
So we need to make a date to have an offline conversation.
Yeah.
ASAP.
It's so awkward for me to, as me, to have boundaries ever about anything.
I know.
So it's just such a weird feeling to be like, I guess I won't say those words out loud that are inside of me, which is so weird.
Yeah, I mean, because they are being recorded and put out to the universe. And so sometimes it's like, oh, we already didn't share everything.
I know. It's until you're actually ready for certain things to be said, you're not ready for them to be said.
I hear you. I'm with you.
But like, I think because the reason I'm sort of like fascinated by that fact, because there's so much in life that I have looser boundaries around talking about than most human mammals. So
right.
When there's a boundary, it's like, wait, oh, I wonder. I actually do wonder, is this how people feel all the time? Like, you know how people are boundaried?
Well, let's be clear. Everybody has boundaries, but they're all in different places. Like some people are like, won't share any words, but boy, are they heavily boundaried on other things. And then they're the same people who, wait, no, I got that wrong. People who won't share any words, but have no boundaries when it comes to like activity
behavior.
Or bodies or behavior.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah, I know. And that's, I think what I'm getting at is like my sense with most human beings that I talk to is, okay, Katie, rein it in a little for this person, because this is a normal person who has boundaries around stuff. So like, it may actually be too, like that it's not all boundaries, that some of it's just like, are you a more reserved person? Are you a more expressive person? You know what I mean?
You don't want to blow people out of the water right away.
I sort of do want to, but I also don't.
There's that. I mean, well, there's always that thing of like, am I being myself or am I changing who I am for someone else? But up to a point, we want to, you know, I don't want to fuck up your day because I'm so me. I don't mind like going, well, you know what? I'll just back off a teeny bit because I think you need some space. But
I think what I'm saying is that my sense of when it's time to back off is a lot later than most people's sense. And like, sometimes I think that's part of my charm. And other times I think, I suck. Like, I am a difficult person to deal with. I recently read a thing. It said something, where was that? Maybe it was Enneagram or it was something, but it was like something about relational dynamics. And it was like, well, this person is going to be generally argumentative, which is difficult to deal with. And it was so like, finally stated, it was stated so like, this is reality and these people are difficult. And I was like, oh, fuck.
That wasn't like one of the gene keys in human design? Was that where it was?
You know, it may well have been.
I feel like that came up like last week or whatever when we were talking to Amy about like you were talking about your mom, speaking of boundaries. And you were like, oh, well, her human design tells me exactly who she's going to be. And I guess I can't hold that against her anymore because that's just who she is.
Well, that's not exactly what I said, but I hear what you're saying. Like I already wasn't really holding much against her anymore.
True.
But I can't hang out with her.
Yeah. I think that's the thing of like judgment versus just
boundaries
in reality. Like I'm not going to hate you for it, but boy, do I not want to be near you.
Yeah, God bless, peace and blessing. And you know what's a trip? The older I get to, the more I'm like, that woman has friends and she made money and she saved it and she lives in a lovely house and she has a life.
Like, and people love her and want to be near her.
Love her and adore her and she's doing fine. So, I just don't believe in anybody being right or wrong anymore. I just believe like things work for individuals or they don't, which is very human designy. It's like, she and I don't work well together. And I'm sure, you know, even though she's made efforts to talk and would, I think, would prefer it if we had a relationship that was open, you know, that we were talking. I think, I mean, she's said to me regularly, you know, you're a pain in the ass too. You know, you're hard to deal with too. And I've been like, cool, sweet. I gotta go. Some people like me. And she feels the same way. She's like, people like me too. And I'm like, I'm not one of those people. And she's like, cool, me either. And finally, I was the one who was like, high five, let's go. You go over there, I'll be over here.
I was just, so I went to a bar that had karaoke recently. And like, you know, they still had like certain practices in place. Like when you're walking around the bar, put your mask on. But if you're at your spot with your folks, you can take it off. When you sing on the microphone, they have these mic condoms. They're like these fabric covers that you put on and you take it off and you're done, disposable. So there was like, you know.
Did you slip it on your peen for a second?
I did. Well, what I did notice was like, I went and did a duet with my friend and she was having an awful lot of trouble getting hers to go on. And I was like, I've put on a lot more of these than you perhaps. She's like, I'm not so sure about that. I was like, well, I mean, I put it on myself pretty much every time. So, you know, I've got.
I have to say, that is a thing that I have. I think I've fully relinquished that responsibility in my life to the dude.
To put someone else's on?
I'm not putting any condoms on anybody.
Yeah, it just doesn't. It rarely works. I mean, some people have like developed the whole skill and they're like, watch this. I'm like, cool. But now it's kind of weirdly pinching me in a weird place. So you didn't actually. I know where it should go.
Listen, if you have to roll a thin rubber sheet over the most sensitive part of you, I figure you handle that. I'll be over here looking sultry, keeping you in the mood.
Keeping myself in the mood. Yeah.
And then you can handle all that. I got stuff to do.
All right. Well, sidetrack to the combination of humans question that we were talking about.
Combination of humans.
Like you and your mother, just nope, not a combo.
Right.
Those keys. Like if you look at the cutouts of the notches and then like her cutouts are all round and yours are all square and like these never, none of our notches are going to line up.
So who's the key and who's the hole?
I think you're both. In this case, it's like a puzzle piece. Okay. There's no primary, secondary. They're just like, she's in a totally different puzzle that was cut from a different jigsaw.
Oh, that's good. She's in a puzzle that's like pictures of the city. And I'm in a puzzle that's like flowers on outside.
Sure.
And you can't put those two.
Yeah,
they're
different puzzle boxes.
Different puzzles.
It just happened to be that you were birthed from her.
Yeah. Boy, you know how many times I've had the sentence go through my head, just because somebody birthed you doesn't mean fill in the blank.
Fill in the blank.
I've had that thought. I mean, like there's so many things with my mom where I had to learn over the years of like, just because she birthed me doesn't mean I have to call her every Sunday and be tormented. Just because she birthed me doesn't mean I have to send her a card when she's going to shame me for it was the wrong card. Just because she birthed me actually doesn't mean we have to have a relationship in any way.
Yeah. I mean, we do put a lot of stuff. Well, they're family. You do the well, they're family thing a lot. And that has some validity, but it's also important to go, yeah, I know. They're family.
I mean, I think it has validity for the people it has validity for.
Right.
Until
you see the exception to that thing.
And it doesn't have any.
No.
It doesn't have any validity for me at all.
Anyway, just to return, I was talking to this person who was. We were talking about a third person that I didn't know very well. I'm being very vague just because I don't know why. But, and she was like, oh yeah, that person really doesn't like me. And I was like, really? And she was like naming all these things that this person had like heaped on them. Like, oh, you're this. Or like literally said like, oh, what did she say? She said, she was just telling a story in a group. And she said, yeah, this cow totally hit me with its head. And this person was like, cows are nice. Okay. But like that was the smaller example of a whole host of, but then that same person, like everybody else likes them and they like everybody else in the group of this people. And so when she comes over to interact, she's like, well, this person hates me and I don't know why.
Yeah.
And they've decided that I am all these things.
Yeah.
And now I don't like them because they treat me like shit. So we're a bad combination. That's what we ultimately came to. It's like, it's so weird because, and then you almost feel gaslit as a person because everybody else is like, no, they don't do that.
Well,
but you're like, but they do it to me.
Yeah, totally. But I have a question though. In that situation, let's call the person A and person B.
Okay.
And person B is the one that doesn't like person A.
Right. And person A was my friend.
Okay. So has person A attempted to find out from person B why?
I'm not sure if she's like directly asked her, but because it every time anything happens, the other person's like, well, you're this, bleh, and like shits on them. So like, it was just an interesting story. It ultimately just came down to, I was like, I mean, we've seen that in theater where like someone's like, are you fucking kidding me? I hate working with that director or that actor. And everybody else is like, wow, they're so nice to me.
I know.
I've heard this about a particular casting director that we all know. People are like,
yeah.
Oh, I hate auditioning for that person.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I love that person like with fondness. Not Isn't just that- like, yeah, they're fine. I'm like, no.
I know.
They're actually one of the kindest people I know. And I'm
like, I mean, I think that right there is evidence for like, we never have to judge anyone else or ourselves. We never have to say, you know, that Maria Valadon and I don't get along. Let's bleep her name. Thank you, Desmond. Therefore, I am a bad person. It's like, no, it's just like, okay, here's a good way to put it. You wouldn't make a grilled cheese sandwich and put a piece of cake in it. You wouldn't put a full cake piece between two slices of bread that had melted cheese on them and then think it's going to be delicious.
Right.
They don't go together. Okay. You wouldn't put, how long can I do this? You wouldn't put steak together with like pink bubble gum.
Oh, yeah. See, I was like, there were so many options you could have said that someone could have argued for you, like chocolate. I'm like, no, I'm like a mole. Okay. Okay. But that was a good choice. Pink.
Thank you.
Bubble gum.
Yeah, it doesn't
work. Chewy, and you're like, what is this? And now I have gum in my mouth while I'm trying to chew a steak. That's awful.
It's also like it's so sweet, and then the steak is so like earth and meat and
I could deal with the combination of flavors. I couldn't deal with the combination of textures.
Oh, I'm the opposite. I could totally dig those textures, but those flavors together, no. Vomit in my mouth. I wonder, there have to be people who are sexually aroused by vomit.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Let's not go down that like we did last time with poop chest.
Poop chest?
We went off for an hour and a half about pooping on chest.
We talked about dirty. Isn't that Dirty Sanchez? No, that's
poop. No, that's the mustache. But it's just, it's a Connecticut chest of drawers.
No.
No, it's
I believed you so fully.
That's a running joke with your lovely friend, Sam Shaw.
Oh my God. How much do I miss playing improv games with you and Sam Shaw?
Do you want to get really upset? I went over to Sam's apartment and we played improv games the other day. Just he and I. We did some scenes.
No.
Yeah.
Did you at least put a cutout of me in the room?
We did. We talked about you a lot. Mostly good. Like, 80%.
Mostly. Did you punch it in the face at any point? The cutout?
We did.
Okay. Now I feel included. If I don't get punched once per rehearsal, I don't feel right.
Good.
So we have my dear friend coming on today who I'm excited is going to come on. Her name is Maggie. And I want to just totally leave. We'll introduce her through her framing of herself.
Okay.
But I just want to say that like Maggie is one of those people who, oh my gosh, she's so damn full of joy and bubbles that I'm like, I'll regularly have the thought, like, yeah, how did you get made like this? Because I know her well enough to like, it's sincere. She's sincerely a joy-filled person and she's human. She goes up and down and has her days, but her so much effervescent, bubbly wonderfulness that I go, I am such an East Coast Jew in my soul. I am so like, my first reaction to life is cynical and cranky and butt jokes. And hers is just bubbles and light and joy. Mm. And I just find her delightful and wonderful. And like, we're like, you know, those people in your life where you enjoy from your own lens, the funny juxtaposition of your two energies.
Yeah.
You have those people where you're like, oh, this person's really different. And we're great together because we're like so different. And then I love her.
Well, then you can also be grateful that like that energy wants to hang out with your energy. And that's also like something, there's something validating about that. If you're like, I'm a big old cranky pants. And yet still this joy bubble wants to be near this cranky pants.
That's the thing. And like the real fact of it would be something along the lines of like, I had a therapist who said like, I was describing myself that way to her. She's like, actually, here would be my guess. You own your lower self. And a lot of people really disown their lower selves. and they won't say what's true, and they won't tell you how they actually feel. And when they're sad, they can't express it. So that people who can't own their lower self as easily as you can are drawn to you because you let yourself do that. And that's like a more positive framing of it than like, yeah, I'm a cranky Jew, which is racist against my own people. And also just a shitty thing to say about myself. But like, I know what I mean. I mean it affectionately, and I don't actually feel judged by that statement because I know how I'm holding it. But I probably still shouldn't frame it that way, which, by the way, brings me to thank you. I want to publicly say you had a thing recently where you helped me once again around some languaging I was using, where you were like, I think we should cut that out of the episode because yeah, you can't say that.
You probably shouldn't say that.
Yeah. Can I talk about what it was really briefly?
I mean, sure. If we're going to call it out, then we're calling it out. Then we know what we're acknowledging.
Well, yeah. I mean, because I learned, and I think it's important for people to, I like the humility of going like, I did this thing incorrectly and I learned a thing. There may be people who would learn from it too. And there may be everybody who's just like, really, Katie, you didn't know that? To which I go, no, I didn't. And let's try to practice a little compassion because I learned. Yeah. I learned.
And now I'm slightly better for it. Yep.
Well, yeah, I feel better for it. Like the thing I said was something about, I was making a joke and I said, you want to...
You said beaten by gypsies. You were talking about all the traumas someone could have. And you said, maybe they were da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, beaten up by gypsies.
It makes me laugh now because it's, I know how wrong it is.
Right. And then you're like, then, holy shit, I said a really awful thing.
Well, it makes it funnier because it's so wrong. But it's just my sense of humor. But you helped me. You sent me an article and you were like, we probably shouldn't say that because now in our culture, the term gypsy is referential of, like, maybe you could speak to it better. How
it's just very simply, it's always been a negative term. We just didn't frame it that way because we were saying, oh yeah, gypsies are those people over there that we think of as, you know, the thieves in Europe. But that even that is like then placing an identity of some actual people as, oh, all those people are thieves. But gypsy refers to the Roma or Romani people very specifically. But that is a very highly persecuted group. Like, there was literally, you know, they were like one of the categories of concentration camp. Yeah, like you had Jews, queers, gypsies, like, and that, so it's like, it's that loaded, like that word has a huge history of being a word we use casually to refer to jazz and a type of a style of belly dance. And, you know, like, but there's a significant portion of the people who are covered by that word who are like, we really would love it if you didn't use that word.
I think Maggie's here.
You are correct. Maggie is just entered the waiting room. We ready to have her in? I almost
all the way up.
All the way up. What if she's really grumpy? That'd be hilarious.
Maggie! Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you for joining us. Look at you with your gorgeous earrings.
I just can't with you.
I can't stand that.
Wait, turn your head. I need to see them in their full view. Oh, they're like a beaded rainbow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, very nice. This is a perfect transition into, I said to Cassidy before you came on and to the listeners, like, I want to let Maggie introduce herself with regard to, like, how do you frame, who the hell is Maggie? And how do you frame what she's up to? And I was like, we're going to give that to her. And part of it, I'll just say now, has to do with these earrings. She actually makes with her hands and soul these GD earrings that you see before you. But welcome, Maggie. How would you introduce yourself? What are you up to in the world?
What am I up to? I am making earrings that empower and inspire. And then I'm also, here's the other bit. So the earring,
yep.
Voila. Yep. And then I help people befriend their bodies and nourish their life.
Ooh. Befriend their bodies.
You got the language down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I like
befriend
that.
Befriend their bodies and nourish their life. I love it. Tell us. TM, trademark. You can't have it, listeners. It's hers. I love it. Tell us more about what does that look like? Like, what does that mean? Coaching sessions, energy work. Well, tell us more.
Yeah, all of it. Well, I mean, just as a side note too, it's partly I do that because I've gone from absolutely hating my body starting at 12 years old to literally feeling like I walk around in my bestie and have like, I talk with my body and it's part of my guide kind of thing. So in my work is really like first we think it's the, like, we want to look a certain way. We are obsessed with how we eat, the diet industry, like the $96 billion diet industry is here to shame the shit out of you. I don't know if I'm allowed to hear what I just did.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
You can say pretty much anything except certain racial slurs, which we just spent a big amount of time discussing.
Noted. All right. Now that you've said that, they're going to
Right. They're going to bubble out. It's fine.
But so the diet industry totally lies to us and thinks like this will fix you. So it's always this fix, fix, fix. So my life is really about the conversations of like, you know, what's really underneath that and the energetics of really shifting into, it's not a fixing thing. It's kind of like, it's funny, I use a diet industry reference for this, but, and it's a healthier one where if you're wanting to feel better in with what you eat is you crowd out the stuff that makes you feel like shit.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this is like crowding out the energies and the thoughts that are keeping you looking in the mirror. And like most people will look in the mirror and look to the parts of their body that they don't like, right? And then judge the shit out of them, which that's all you see. Like I used to hate my bum. I love my bum, just let's say. Let's just acknowledge that now.
A bum too. Where are we? Are we in England now? What's happening?
I am Canadian.
I was about to say you're either Canadian or maybe from New England. But there you go.
No, it's funny. That's like my little kid came out. So I used to look in the mirror and look at my bum. Now I'm gonna have to say it. Look at my booty and think it was terrible and horrible. And you know, it took a while of, you know, reframing where my eyes went to look at the parts of my body that I loved and adored. Or even like I actually start people too with acknowledging that their body functions on certain levels without them having to think about it.
Yeah.
And the digestion and everything, because we get so disconnected from our bodies that we forget that we can trust our body.
Mm. Okay. We just have to pause real quick because I need the listeners to understand that from my perspective, Maggie Emerson or Schlarb?
Emerson.
I'm so sorry.
Wow, okay.
Maggie Emerson. Maggie has a couple emails and I'm always confused which one is the one.
Well, to be clear, Schlarb is still my legal name. That was my married name. Emerson is actually my chosen last name.
Okay, got it. Maggie Emerson. When I look at Maggie Emerson, I literally think if I could leave my body right now, switch bodies with another human woman, look like someone I know, I would choose you today. And I have several friends like that who are just stunning beauties and they just look like from my perspective, you're a cover model. You should be in the centerfold of magazines. You should be doing runway walks. You're stunningly gorgeous to me. And the body you have in my mind, the ideal. So what I love, 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 Maggie, I didn't even know this about you until you just said that. Thank you for saying that. Is that even you, who to my mind, any human mammal that would see you with their eye holes would be like, oh, perfection is before me. I understand now what perfection is. Even you are having like the experience of there was a part of your body you couldn't stand and were in judgment of and now have a better relationship with. Like, I'm stuck on that because I'm like, Maggie has anything about her body she doesn't like? How? And the answer is our culture.
And I will tell you, it started because, do you remember YM magazine, Young Miss?
Yes.
So I was 12 years old in my sister's pink bedroom looking at her YM magazines and decided I wanted to be a model. And I was considered big boned as a kid. I had a little extra to me.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I don't believe it.
Actually, I should show you. I have a picture of cute.
Please. My God. If you were big boned, I was sick and unhealthy and obese.
This one actually doesn't fully show it. You can see my cute cheeks. Check this out.
Okay. All I see there is an insane turtleneck and a ridiculous haircut. That's all I see. I don't see big boned. I see your mom made an interesting hair choice.
Should I bring it back?
Maybe.
Maybe.
The mushroom cut?
It was a mushroom ball cut, just for the listeners.
Oh, yeah. With my earrings, it would just show off my ears.
That's true. You can really feature your work.
Yeah. But it's true because I was 12 years old And so then I decided to starve myself. And it was that whole body dysmorphia. I still actually can see from, I remember looking in my full length mirror when I was 12 years old, and I could see the dark circles under my eyes, like in the gauntness from like a different perspective, like maybe my higher self or something. But my human self was thinking, oh my God, I'm so fat. And like literally having a little bit of celery a day.
Gosh. Okay. I want to talk. I'm so excited. This is going to be an eating disorder episode. I'm thrilled. Here's why I'm so excited. Let me think about how to frame this. I had the same thing, of course, because I'm a human female in America. And I believe that like, it's very difficult to be a human female in America and not come away from your childhood with some kind of body dysmorphic thinking. I mean, I don't know too many people who don't have some of it, right? So for me, I had that same thing, but I was a failure at dieting. In other words, so for me, it was like double whammy because I couldn't even quote unquote succeed or do it right or get skinny. I couldn't fucking do it. And so I hated the body, thought I looked terrible, and then had no recourse. I couldn't even like quote solve the problem. So then the spiral has another fucking rung on it because you can't even win ever. Anyway, but even as I say that, I realize that's not necessarily the one that has an extra rung, because in your case, knowing what I know about anorexia and people who undereat, the challenge of when you can succeed at it, meaning do the thing America says, make yourself look the way, now you're fucked in your own double way because now you're sick. You have an addiction to being underfed potentially or being ill, but from not having nourishment, but you can't stop it now because you're getting all these accolades and all this praise, right?
Exactly. It's like, oh my goodness, you look great. What are you doing? Like, what exercise are you doing? You must be eating. Like, wow, it's insanity. Like, it is full on insanity.
Yeah. Yeah. And so was there a point in time for you where I think what I'm hearing you say is that for some period of time in your younger years, you underate maybe sort of like a lot, like maybe we're anorexic a bit.
Oh yeah. So
okay. No,
I like feel like I almost touched on all the eating disorders throughout it. Like it was, so anorexia at 12, and my parents had me in counseling, which switched that, like not eating, but then over-exercising became the thing. There was still an obsession around food. And if I ate chocolate, then I would exercise. I actually, for a while, I loved to bake. And I would bake from scratch and not use a recipe and love it, but not eat a single bit of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that one. Yeah.
And then at 18, I went to school for fitness and lifestyle management, which is like, you know, right there. You're in your little sports bra and your little short shorts and you're doing body fat testing. Like, you know, everybody around there is not everybody, but a lot of them are obsessed around body. There was bodybuilders in there. And I remember sitting in my friend's like hallway to her apartment on the stairs, calling my parents and saying, mom and dad, I'm bulimic. So I hit I like to eat then because I knew I needed to eat, but then I was throwing it up. Right. And so it just so happened. And this was kind of the turning point of like, it didn't heal right away, but the turning point.
Yeah, no, of course. But, I know all about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So was there just so happened, of course, like, thank you, universe. But it just so happened that two blocks down from where I lived was a place called Sheena's Place. And it was a place for eating disorders. And they just so happened to have a 6-week course starting up, I think 2 weeks later after I called my parents. So we got me signed up. And I remember going into the first session. And, you know, we're sitting in there and all different shapes and sizes. Right. And I remember, I don't know why this is important, but I had like, because I didn't like myself, I kept cutting my hair shorter and shorter. I remember having really, really short hair. The mushroom cut, perhaps. But I remember one lady, as we all were introducing ourselves, said she had been bulimic for 20 years and she had to starve herself for a week in order to go out on a date with her boyfriend so she could eat. So her boyfriend didn't know. And that was that's it. I'm not living that life.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because probably, I don't know, this is totally armchairing it, but like I'm imagining at a certain point, you're always thinking that this is temporary. This is just till I get to some particular piece of something until you realize, no, this is not, because you will never reach that thing. That thing is not achievable.
It's not. And it's this, it's like, it's so consuming. like it is like infiltrates every thought and limits you from going out, from mm-hmm. friendships, from like it just is like this all consuming thing. And yeah, in the hopes of having the perfect body.
Right. Yeah. So what is in your mind, how do you frame, I don't know what the words would be, but what is health and wellness for you today in terms of how you look at yourself and see yourself? Like, what does recovery look like in terms of your thinking, I should say?
Well, I mean, I love my body, like, but not like, not just like, yes, I'm currently lean and fit, right? That's partly because I love to move and hike, but it's also like, I have conversations with my body, right? So it's like, it's not like, I'm saying like a lot, that's interesting. Just take a breath. I'm excited. What I have done is that befriending my body is actually knowing that my body has its own innate wisdom, and it actually knows what it needs to eat. It knows the type of exercise it requires. It knows like the people it wants to be around. It knows all of that. Just like a baby, like a mama's body when she's breastfeeding will tune into the baby's body, and the milk will change based on what the baby's body needs.
Mm.
Our bodies have that capacity. So health to me is being connected to my body such that, you know, sometimes I'll over caffeinate. Like, I'm not going to lie. You know, sometimes I'm like, give me the extra
shot. It's fun.
Yeah. Right. It's like, there's things, but in general, the health is like fully trusting my body and myself to be so connected, so aligned that I'm eating exactly what it needs to be fueled. I'm eating exactly what it needs. Our bodies have a natural homeostasis for like how our unique bodies are designed. It has a natural way. And like right now, my size is outside of the last 2 years, there was some energetic things that I changed my body, and then that changed and my body went back to its like natural state where I don't count calories. Sometimes I have key lime pie for breakfast. You know, it's like, and those things don't even faze me. It's like when I have the sense that, oh, like key lime pie would be really yummy and delicious and bring me joy, then I eat the key lime pie. Yeah, that's the health of it.
Well, it's interesting we're saying this because I'm actually wondering how this lands for you, Cass, because I'm assuming you have no eating disorder history. I have tons of eating disorder history. And so when I hear Maggie talking, I'm hearing her like, it's so normal for an eating disordered person to think like certain foods are wrong and bad and illegal. And then we make them illegal and we're not allowed to have them. So Maggie's saying like, if I want the key lime pie, I have the key lime pie. And then I'm thinking non-eating disordered people might hear that like, yeah, what do you, yeah.
What's no, but the- I definitely understand because
okay.
I wouldn't classify any version of what I've had as eating disorder, but I have gone through phases of being like because at one point I did the sugar buster diet because I was feeling like I was just eating too much sugar and getting heavier than I wanted to be. But ever since then, and this was over 10 years ago, and it worked. I lost a good 10, 15 pounds just by not eating white, basically anything that was white or corn, you know, that was basically it. But ever since then, it's a calculation in my head every single time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a tiny, like, oh, there I am having corn tortilla.
I'm so sorry. I have to, do you hear the cat?
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a second. Let me let her in because I'm not going to be able to focus. But carry on. I'll be right back.
I'm curious too about the calculation in your head.
It's more just an acknowledgement. It's a moment of here I am eating that, you know, or, you know, with the any conversation around gluten, that's such a loaded freaking word now that like I don't just have a piece of toast. I'll have a piece of toast. And, you know, I generally don't even have much breakfast. I kind of vaguely intermittently fast, vaguely, not really. But like, if I have a piece of toast, I don't just have a piece of toast. I go, I'm having a piece of toast. Like, it's still a thing of me when like, yeah, this will be good. I'm going to enjoy it. But I am having a piece of toast. My eyebrows raise, you know.
Yeah.
So there's still I get the very minor. And I think we all exist because of it's 99% marketing that all of that exists.
Here's something I struggle with still, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, Maggie. I'd love your perspective on this. It is the case for me in my body when I don't eat the white things, specifically dairy, white bread, pasta, and white sugar. My skin is clearer. My frame is lean. My metabolism is high. Like, the body works better. Physically, it, you know, functions well when I don't have those things in it. And I'm sad, emotionally sad. And so my whole thing is like, it took me years to get away from binge eating. And that was like a ton of healing, that whatever that was. And that worked. And then that just isn't appealing anymore. I just don't binge eat, and I haven't in years. But the idea that one day I'll lose these 10 pounds and feel good about my body. I actually feel very good about myself, like my sense of self I've worked on a lot. But the idea that like, if when I get these 10 pounds off, I'm gonna feel great, both in myself and my body. I'm gonna look good. I'm gonna be sexy again. That is still with me. And I do know that when I eat a certain way, that feels to my psychology and my emotions very restrictive and sad making, I lose that 10 pounds. And I'm like, well, I'm a little stuck because it seems like that's the solution, but I'm not willing to live that way anymore. I don't torment myself like that anymore. So I with this sort of like what I call in my mind, like a consequence of it. Okay. I'm not going to torment myself. I'm going to eat what my body wants to eat. And then I have to live with these extra 10 pounds, but then I'm mad about that. Cause I'm like, there's people around me eating key lime pie for breakfast, for example, who don't have the extra 10 pounds. So what am I doing wrong?
Well, there's on one hand, it's like, what does the white, I'm going to call it the white stuff, but the sugar, all that stuff, what does it actually mean to you?
Yeah, it means a lot of things. I've looked deeply at this. I'll tell you what it means. It means nourishment. It means joy. It means love. It means calm down after intensity. It means amp up when I'm low. It's a tool for like 8 different things for me.
Okay. So then the question would be, can you have, like, it's not about eliminating it. It's not about that at all.
Okay.
So can you go to the place putting yourself energetically in what, like the 10 pounds lighter, are those feelings allowed in that spot?
Are those feelings, the feelings of joy, nourishment, amped up, put down, are they allowed in that spot?
Like, are they like, can you have those when you're 10 pounds lighter?
I don't know how to. Yeah. I'm allowed, but I don't know how.
Right. And this is the like mind-boggling piece. So it's starting to look at, and I know you write, I don't know how, like if it's journaling or that sort of thing, but it's starting to go, okay, if I were already the 10 pounds lighter Katie, right?
Yeah.
Then how would I feel? What are my thoughts? How would I feel about eating the sugar, all of that? And just kind of going through, like, how would you feel if you were already 10 pounds and you knew that those 10 pounds were gone? You said, bye-bye, sayonara. Then how would you feel?
About eating sugar?
Just in general.
If the 10 pounds were gone, how would I feel in general?
Yeah.
Okay. let me think about it. I want to do this. I would feel like I looked good and like I would feel vulnerable and raw emotionally. I know it because I've been there many times. I've lost this 10 pounds many times. I would feel a little too amped up. Like I need to come down. I have like a ton of energy. And when I'm not eating the white stuff, I have like a ton of energy. So then I feel like too much for the world. The world can't handle me. And not only the world can't handle me, I can't handle all that energy inside of me. So that's part of why I don't let it stay off. Because when it's off the 10 pounds, it's almost like life feels too intense. Like life is too intense and I'm too intense in life and I have too many feelings and they need to be calmed down and I can't have them and manage them and live life at the same time. I feel like I could either live life or manage the feelings, but not both together if I lose the 10 pounds.
So I just wonder, and I wonder if you just went, okay, like you did 1 pound at a time, right? 1 pound, and you got used to the difference of the vibration. And then you like evolved into the high energy you, but it was so close from that last pound that it no longer is that intensity.
I would have no idea how to go 1 pound at a time. I don't know how you do that.
You ask your body? You do. You start a conversation with your body.
And you say what?
You say, hey, body, like, honestly, what you just said to me, like, I really want to lose 10 pounds. I really feel like that's too intense for me. And it's hard for, like, I hate that I have to lose the, drop the sugar and blah, 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 in order to lose the weight. And I'd like to do this differently. Can you show me the way?
Can you show me the way?
Show me the way.
And then what that means is when you say body, show me, what that means is the next time I go to eat, I go, okay, body, what do you actually want and need? And then I listen to what my actual body wants and needs.
Yeah. So can I share a story with you about that? So, and it's like, I remember I was at, I had an office over here because you can see where I'm pointing. and I remember I had a bunch of energy sessions with people coming up and I was hungry, but I wanted something to feel like light and energized for the rest of the afternoon. Right. So what would you think cognitively outside world tell you to eat to feel light?
Popcorn.
Like popcorn or salad or something like that. So when I tuned in, all I could see was this sandwich from this place called the Yellow Carrot that had the best bacon. I don't know if you're a meat eater, but I love bacon. The best bacon, avocado, creamy sauce, bread. It was gluten-free because I was gluten-free before it was cool. True. And I've tested, my body doesn't like it. But I went and ate this huge sandwich, all of it. And I ate it and I was light and it was just this lightness that came over me. And it really is that tuning in to, you know, body, what do you need? What do you require? And sometimes I've had, not so much anymore because I've had a lot of experience, but I'd have these like, really, body, really? That's what you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I had this happen last night. If go ahead. Sorry.
No, go.
What were you going to say? Well, what I was going to say is that last night, so, oh God, I hate this conversation, but I love it. I actually really like that we're doing this. It's so vulnerable for me, but it feels good. So during the day yesterday, I ate well, meaning like I wasn't overdoing it with carbs and whatever the fuck eating well means. I felt like, I don't know how to explain it, but I got to dinner. We went out to dinner and it was, I don't know, later than a normal dinner time or whatever. And I thought, in my mind, I thought, what I should do is have these foods. I had in my mind whatever foods I should have. Got to the restaurant, read the menu. What my body really wanted was the lamb burger and the salad. And then I wanted some of my man friend's fries. So I had all that. And I thought, oh, well, I'll just be bloated or I'll just be chubby and I don't give a fuck and I'm not dieting. Woke up this morning. I felt trimmer and slimmer than I felt in a while. My belly was not bloated. I felt really thin in the morning for me, my version of what my Katie thinness is. So I was like, huh, look at that. Because I ate that joyfully and it's what I wanted. It's what my body actually wanted. And it's interesting because I had the burger and like 3/4 of the way through the burger, I was like, I'm actually full. My body was like, no more. And so it wasn't about, it's exactly the thing you're saying. It wasn't about, I should have the salad because, you know, the mind will say you should have the salad, but then your body goes, I actually want the pasta. And then because there's an actual desire with it and there's an actual joy in eating it and the body actually wants it, it metabolizes it just fine.
Yep.
And is that kind of what we're...
Yeah. And you hit the joy of eating. So you know how they say, the saying goes, you are what you eat, right? Just bullshit in my point of view. But this perspective, if you sit there and you judge your food, you're scooping into your body a whole bunch of judgment.
Mm. So
you're going to feel shitty.
Mm.
Right. But if you're eating with joy and you're letting food is delicious, right? Mm-hmm. Food is so yummy.
Yeah.
Right. And if you let yourself enjoy that, same thing, like people are like, think they have to eat everything off the plate. But when you're in enjoyment of the food, all of a sudden you go, oh, I'm done. And you might have to save the rest of the hamburger for breakfast the next morning or whatever you want.
Let me just throw this in there. And that is that we often, like, I know if I'm in judgment of my food, I've double fucked myself because I'm not enjoying this treat that I'm giving myself. Like, if I'm like, ooh, I want a burger and fries. But then if I go into the place of like, oh, I shouldn't have burger and fries, then guess what? I'm both having something I, quote, shouldn't have, and it's not even worth it. Because I just fucked myself from both directions.
Yeah, totally.
Not in a good way.
Not in the way that we might desire.
Yeah. So here's my question on this. That's a totally great point, Cass, is that I want to know if this is true for you, Maggie, and I'm actually hoping it's not, because I like learning that, like, the way that I got to whatever I got to is different than, you know, everybody's so different and we need to always be remembering that, I think. But anyway, at least people on a healing path, people doing work on themselves. It's like no one right way is my main motto in life. So for me, I had to do so much healing to get to where I could even feel in my body what it wanted on a menu. I mean, years of healing to get to where it used to be, I'd look at a menu and I both wanted everything, and everything was wrong. So there was no ability to feel in my body and choose from my body. There was just projection and judgment only. Then years went by, healing, all the healing. And then one day I could look at a menu and go, oh, I feel like I actually want the ravioli. That's what I want. But that took me so long because of the kind of trauma I had and because of the this and the that and the whatever. So I'm wondering, do you work with your clients to help them get to where they can feel what their body wants? Or do you find that people already know, or what?
No, because like learning the language of your body is like learning a whole new language. Like it really is. Like, sure, you have the having to go to the bathroom and the like itchy and, but no, the language of your body is a whole new language. I actually call it the manual you never thought you were given when you were born, because it has all this beautiful information for you. But no, it's learning a language, and it's learned, like, because it's such a foreign thing.
Yeah.
It's learning to trust your body. And I don't start with food, because learning to trust your body when it has that much energy on it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't ring. So I actually, one of the things I often have people do is to go on a magic, what I call a magic walk. My son calls this left, right, straight, but you go, you kind of pick a time, amount of time you want to do, and you go out wherever you are. I wouldn't do it in the country necessarily, because you need a place where you can make choices along the way. So you go on your walk, and every time you get to a place where there's a T in the road, or you can go left, right, or straight, you go, hey, body, which way? And then when you say body, which way, you start to get this sense of what direction your body wants to go. You'll feel a little energetic tug to which way, and you trust that. And so you go on this magic walk, and it'll take you somewhere. I can't tell you where it'll take you, but it'll take you somewhere so that you can trust your body, and it maybe take you all the way home. The first time I did this, I was at a friend's house. And I woke up way early in the morning, and it was someone like, my husband at the time and kiddo were still asleep, and everybody was asleep. And I was like, okay, I'll do yoga. It's too dark for me to go out. I don't know the neighborhood. I kept getting this impulse from my body to go for a run. I was like, hey, body, we don't run anymore. Like, we quit that. Right. And for 45 minutes on the yoga mat, I fought my body. Like, I fought it. I was like, we're not going. I said, okay, fine. It was just this nag. I said, fine. If I'm going for a run, you're going to lead me. And so out I went in a neighborhood I didn't know, where it was dark. And this was when I was sort of afraid of the dark at the time. Like, my eyes will see funny things in the dark. And so I kept going, which way, which way, which way, as I hit the little crossroads. And I remember then it took me to a trail. And I remember being on the trail. And on the trail, I remember going, can we turn around yet? And I kept hearing, like, sensing, not yet, not yet. My body took me on an entire loop in an area where I didn't know and got me back to my friend's house. And that's where I start with that conversation with your body. It doesn't start with food. It starts with my body, like learning the language, and my body has wisdom.
Man alive. This is some good shit, Maggie, not Schlarb.
Maggie Emerson, may I ask?
Legally, I'm still a Schlarb. That's still in the work.
It's funny, really fast. Schlarb is so not the energy of you. You're like effervescent light in a bottle. And Schlarb is like the sound that a slug makes when it's overweight and dragging itself across a sunny fucking sidewalk on the side of a terrible broken down village in a shitty part of Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a lot of imagery.
I know. Do you see why when you said, are you schlarp? And I was like, no.
Yes. Cassie,
and we can probably do some work on that because, you know, that's all about perception. My question is about perception. And I'm wondering, because we've touched lightly on like body dysmorphia, which I have a bit of experience with. Two parts. I will preface this by saying, I remember the first time it was introduced to me, I was hanging out with this woman who was super gorgeous and sexy and all the things, like in my perception. And I think even in her perception in general, but she had learned that if she put an outfit on, she had to take a picture of it and then look at it. Because if she looked in the mirror at it, it looked like shit because she looked like shit. But when she was able to remove herself from it through a picture, it worked. So that was interesting. And then I've had the experience for sure. I am a bit too much about my own image. I look in the mirror a lot. I like to look at myself. I like clothes. So I'll put on an outfit. So when I put on an outfit, and it'll be an outfit I have tested and I know I look good in. And I will at certain times be like, yeah, this outfit, fuck yeah. But then I'll put that outfit on some random day and just be like, who the fuck is that? Who is that? Let's say, who's that schlarp? So unfair. So not okay. Who is that unattractive human being that I'm looking at right now? Like, that guy is not good. This is a terrible outfit. And I know that that's a good outfit on me because I've seen it before. So I understand that that is a game we're playing with our brain. And I'm wondering if you also work on that sort of external perception part of the equation, because I know that is a nightmarishly overwhelming part of the whole thing. How are you seeing me? How am I being seen?
Absolutely. Because that, yeah, that perception of like, because even I think that that picture thing is really fascinating that she, but I think that's brilliant to know for her to have known that seeing it in an image form, she could see what is truly there. And then it's, and then it would be the work of bridging the gap between being able to look in the mirror. So yeah, definitely. And sometimes too, that like on a totally like little bit different direction though, it, the conversation with your body is body, what would you like to wear?
And that may be it. Like, that was a great outfit for yesterday.
Yeah.
But not for today.
Right. And so when you dress based on what, like, intuitively, what, A, the energies you're looking to evoke for the day, right? Because I'm not going to, like, I dress up, even though most of my work is from my home, I usually get dressed up because I feel it, like I ask my body and I feel very different. So when you ask your body what it wants to wear, you know, that outfit might not be today.
Yeah. I've gotten really good at that piece. That piece, I don't leave unless it's like, I'll do crazy stuff too, where I'm like driving away in the car wearing something and I'll park the car, keep it running, run back in to get that scarf because that scarf has to be on this outfit. Or I'll keep the car running. The dog's looking at me like, what happened? She's in the car. I go in and fully change into what my body said 20 minutes ago it wanted to wear. But I was like, but I have an idea. And then I'll put the out. I don't ever feel right until I'm in the outfit that the body said, I wish you had worn this. So now I just don't even fight it anymore. I just go, yes, we're wearing that because that's what you want to wear, body. That's pretty great. It makes me feel happy.
And it does add that joy and it does add that like honoring of you and who you are and what you're up to that day.
Yeah.
It's like a little side note. That's how the earrings work. Like it literally is like my earrings choose me. I don't choose them in the morning.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It is that because it's not. Yeah. Does that, I'm trusting Cassidy that all make like.
Yeah. No. And I can recognize when it works. Like I can recognize, but I don't think I've ever actually put it in that term. And I appreciate that framing because like I get upset at that when it happens because I'm like, I know it's a good up. What's wrong with you? You're being, and I get in judgment of my own perception. I'll be like, well, you're obviously wrong to see it that way, right? Well, you're just marketing to yourself right now or some shit. Instead of like, no, just not today. That is a great fucking outfit. And it will be tomorrow on this same body that won't look any different than it did today. But it literally will be like, this outfit makes my chin look funny today. The other day it has nothing to do with my chin. Like that's the weird shit that our brains do, or I like tell me a story about something in my literal shape that has not changed. I don't know what that part is, but it does, it makes sense. No, I love the idea of just like stepping back from the judgment part of it and just going like, How about this for today?
And then what I was telling Katie too about the 10 pounds, it's really looking at, it's more of an energetic, well, how would I like to feel, right? And it switches gears to the media telling you you have to look a certain way. How does it make me look? Versus what is the energies I'd like to embody? And when you're focused on that, the more you focus on that and like, oh, this shirt, I have a sweater that my one of my mom's best friends gave her and I got when she passed away. So I feel like when I wear it, I have a hug from both of them. Because I very much wear those when I need to be held.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's honoring that. And it's like, I would say it's not the most flattering sweater, but gosh darn it, do I feel loved in it. Right. And so that's where the perception begins to shift. It's like, because we're here to live our lives, not to judge the shit out of ourselves and our bodies. So it's really shifting into the energies of like, what do I need today? And then how would I like to feel? And look on the horizon, like what's on my agenda today? Like, how would I like to, like, what would I like to bring in and embody?
Yeah. You've given me such a good thing here. I want to really highlight it for myself and for the people listening, which is to say, like, I was in a Nia dance class the other day that I want to get you. Do you ever go to that class?
So I'm a Nia black belt, just so you know.
Oh, really? Is that a real thing?
It is actually. It is. Like, I've taken the white belt, the blue belt, the brown belt, and a black belt.
Oh my God. I'd
love to go with you.
Okay. I'm going all the damn time. I love it so much. Oh my God. Anyway, Maggie lives in Durango, which is where I go to the NIA. So we could go together. There's no reason not to. I started to go and I started to lift weights again. I actually love lift, like how I feel when I lifted weights. It feels strong and I really like that feeling. It makes me, I just feel good. Anyway, and I started to be like, this is something I've always wanted to be able to think this way or do this. Started to be like, wait a minute. I feel bad physically when I'm not, like, I've been, okay, let me back up. I've been not exercising almost at all for years because, maybe not entirely unlike you, Maggie, I was so exercise bulimic so many years ago that I was like, okay, cool, not doing that anymore, not going to be psychotic. And also, like, I was starting to get hurt a lot with exercise, like, because I believe the universe and my body were like, you need to stop this abusive thing you're doing and learn how to love yourself, whether you're exercising or not. But then, and I did that, and I do now love who I am as a person. But I realized, like, okay, wait a minute. I feel now, 15 years after that whole thing, I don't feel good not exercising. When I lift and then, I don't know, go to a NIA class another day and then another day do a hike, like when I exert my physical self, I feel actually great after. And the thing is, I did not feel great when I was physically exerting back in the day. I felt worse. And I think it has everything to do with what you're saying is, for me, the way I would frame it is at that time, I literally, and I say this for the people listening who may be earlier in the journey, I had no capacity to love myself, none. And I had no capacity to feel what love felt like from outside or inside. And I had no capacity to hear my body. All I had was my mind saying, you have to work out, you have to work out, you have to work out. That all got changed. I got very embodied. I got very la la la, healed all this stuff, right? Then I woke up and I went, and this is recent, like a couple months ago, I went, I miss moving around. I miss that strong feeling in my arms. And then I was in that NIA class the other day, looking in the mirror going like, huh, I were dancing and we're moving quickly. And my heart is racing because I'm out of shape. Like I need some cardio to have my heart function correctly. And I'm realizing like, okay, I see, like, I haven't been treating my heart very well, my physical organ, the heart. And I haven't been giving my body what it needs in this way. And I didn't feel mad at myself about it. I felt like, well, the reason is because I was spending the past 15 years getting my shit together spiritually. And I went really far in that direction. And now I'm being asked by my body that I can now hear, hey, buddy, could we like lift some heavy metal objects every now and again? Could we like dance around a room with some ladies? I like all that. And remember, you have an organ called the heart, Katie. this is something I've been getting a lot lately. The heart organ is going, you know, your mother's heart gave out and your father had a stroke. You get that that's like a real thing in your genetics, right? And I'm like, right. So it actually makes me feel better to sometimes choose the salad when my body is telling me to choose the salad because it knows. And then other times the ice cream is the thing and it's not causing a heart attack and it's because my body knows. But man, I wish I could impress upon people how long it took me to get there and how much work it took me. I don't want people to feel like it has to take them a long time, but I want people who are early in the process or midway through the process to know you're not crazy if you can't find that yet. It sometimes takes time.
Yep, it does. And I'm so glad you, because it's so ingrained in culture. My guess is most people who have had a mother or a figure in their world who's been in that same energy. And it takes a moment to shift gears.
Yeah, that was a big one too in therapy when they taught me, like, what did your mother used to say about her own body? And kids internalize everything the mother thinks about themselves. Mom said some really self-hating shit about, and she would confuse me too. And this is not to blame her, but this is for people listening to understand. When the parent figure says negative things about themselves, you do internalize that as a kid and it does become part of your narrative. And my mom would say things like, yeah, people just think fat of me. And I'd be like, what? And she'd say, like, if people see a picture of me or if they see me in person, they'll be like, wow, did you lose weight? And I'll say no. And then she'd turn to me and whisper in my ear, everybody thinks fat of me. Like they think I'm fatter than I am. So when they see me, I'm a surprise because I've lost weight. Which you could frame that positively, but in her head, she framed it like they think of me as fat and whatever. And then another thing she would do that was damaging that I learned later, and again, not to blame her, but because it helped me understand where I got this shit. She would say, you're so beautiful, Katie. You're so beautiful. You're so lucky. I never was as pretty as you. And because there was, I never was as pretty as you. Now there's a comparison. One of us is good and one of us is bad. Comparison always sets up judgment and polarity, right? So then I felt guilty looking good because she never got to look good. And there was a subtle implication in what she was saying that I should feel guilty because poor mom never got to feel pretty. Even though, side note, I've seen the pictures of her when she was 20. She was a stunner. But like the rest of us, she didn't know it because whatever programming she got. So again, this is not to blame the mother figure. This is for all of us to understand and start to unpack the places where, what was it that got said? What did get programmed into us so that we can tease that apart and go, you know, it was never wrong of me to be a beautiful young girl. That wasn't wrong. And you know what else? It's not a threat to anyone else. Other people might see it as a threat, but I don't have to internalize that.
Well, and then we can add to that the implied value that is being placed upon you through something that isn't even actually you. It's just this external framework of like, oh, and because you're pretty, that is your value. And then you're like, oh, well, I didn't actually make that.
I mean, you know, many times people have said things to me where they'll say, wow, you this... Like one that happens a lot with my dog is they'll be like, oh, they'll look at me and go, she's so cute. And I'm thinking, why are you complimenting me about how the dog looks? Like, it's a sweet thing. And I go, oh, she is, isn't she? But there's a way that people want to give you credit for the way the animal you're near looks as if I had anything to do with how she came into looking that way. Or when people go like, you're so beautiful. And I can receive, I don't get that a lot, but when people do happen to think I'm an attractive person, I receive it and go, thank you. And I also go, there's a part of me that goes like, you know, I didn't like craft this face. I showed up here like this. So like the parts that are chub, if you're going to judge them, you should talk to God about judging them because I didn't make the chub. And the parts that you like, you're going to have to talk to God about those too because I didn't make the jawline cute.
Yeah, my impulse is often to be like, ooh, I love what you've done here, which is like this outfit you put together or like the choices you've made. They're still aesthetic in my head and I'm still judging someone based on their aesthetics, but it has to do with something that they are embodying or that they have actively participated in. Like, you know, like I love that outfit or I love what you're bringing. like whatever it is, but it's rather than just like, you're pretty. Oh, it's like, it's like, I love this. Or even if it's like, God, that romper looks great on you. I said that to you one time. And it's not, you know, because it accentuates your curves in the right way. No, it's just like, that fucking romper looks great on you. Great choice. How fun. You just brought joy into all of our lives by choosing that romper.
So I think what I'm hearing you say is you're acknowledging the choice the person made, something they actually had choice over.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, you have a lovely jawline, which like the universe did that. I didn't fucking do that. I used to get offended. Like when people would say, I'm sorry, the camera's off you guys. It's because the Wi-Fi keeps dropping out. But I used to have like, I would get really triggered in my early eating disorder recovery days when people would say, I love your shirt or I love your hair. I would be so angry.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yes. Because I would go, why are you judging me? You're judging my hair. What if my hair looked bad today? Would you dislike me because my hair didn't look? And I was real defensive and young about it. Now, of course, I go like, oh my God, thank you. You made my fucking day. If you liked my goddamn hair, thank you. You made my day. It's great. Thank you. Somebody thinks I have something attractive happening. I love it. But my point being, like, that's how thick and layered the complexities of the self-hate can be, that someone's trying to compliment you. And I was hearing it as a criticism of every other day when my hair, you know, which was what my mom.
That's that weird thing of like, yeah, your compliment is actually an insult because you're throwing out all the other things that you're not directing.
It's so negative and so sad. And like, it took a lot of heart healing to get to where I literally don't hear it that way anymore, but it was not easy. That worked.
I just want to say it's 3:25. If we do want to do records, now would be the time. There, I've said it.
Cassidy is the records police. He's very good at it. He's very good at it. I'm terrible at it. So, Maggie, would you like to go into your records today?
Sure, we might as well, unless you have more questions. But, like, I'm open to either.
Yeah, no. I'm trying to think if I actually do have any other questions. But, I think I didn't finish that thought a while ago where I was just going to say, I really appreciate what you gave me today, which is the question, what I'm really taking away is like, hey, my body, 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 here you are, here I am, I hear you, I feel you. I would like to, lose 10 pounds. Could you show me the way? And then when I go to, so many burps. I drink a little bit of water and I got to burp for 90 minutes. What's up? Maggie's like, I don't know. Ask your body. But then it gives me a new way to frame almost like every conversation I'm having with my body where I go like, okay, body, how would this, like, here we are at mealtime. I think I want eggs and Daiya cheese right now. Is that what you want? Would that help us lose the 10 pounds and still feel nourished and happy? Would that be a question, Maggie, that you might play with before a meal if that was your aim to lose 10 pounds? Or how would you frame it?
I mean, yeah, if I'm trying to think how I would do that, it would be more body, what, like, and I think what you're saying, because I'm just so appreciative of you saying this too, because it is asking a few more questions as you learn the language of your body. Right. So it is like that, like my, like, hey, body, my mind is saying this. Is this true for you too? Right. And then do you know the test where I can't do it right now because I can't stand up and show you, but you can take the food, put it in front of your belly and go, hey, body, do you want this?
Yes. I do that regularly.
Go, like, it'll either show you a yes or a no. And obviously you test the yes and no before you have the food. But yeah, it was like, basically, especially when my kid's not here, it's like, okay, body, what do you need? That's what I ask. What do you need? And then, like, some days, like, you know, when we talk about like the, like, some, so I'll go some days in a row just like eating like a carb machine. And then some days it's like, bring on the meat. And like, but it is really just that, body, what do you need? And tuning in. And then if, again, for the 10 pounds, it's like, hey, body, like, this is what we're doing. Like, show me, what can we eat that would allow us to release these pounds that I've been wanting to release with ease and just feeling nourished and how, whatever other energies you want. And have it be in a way for you specifically, Katie, is have it be in a way where it a sustainable growth in your energy, because your energy is expanding as you do this, right? But a sustainable growth so that it's not like a scary, I don't, like, I'll go there for a second and then I have to slingshot myself back.
You mean so that it's not overwhelming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. That.
Yeah. And just to be clear for people listening, in case people don't know about the muscle testing exercise Maggie's describing, what she's describing is you would, let's say you're going to have, I don't know, cow's milk yogurt. You would take the yogurt container, put it, well, sorry, before you do that, you would stand. This is how I understand it, Maggie. I'd love to hear your framing of it, that you would stand with your feet together. This is how I was taught to do it, and say, body, with your feet touching each other. Show me what a yes looks like. And then your body will lean forward for usually for a yes, and it'll lean back for a no. But your body might do something different. Your body might go backwards for a yes or forwards for a no. Right, Maggie?
Yeah, absolutely. So that, and then the next thing that I have people try, just the same exercise, just say, like, I would be, my name is Fred, so that I would know for sure what a, what an untruth is. And then say, my name is Maggie, and know what the truth is in my body.
Just what to would get, happen if you said, my name is Maggie Schlarb?
It would probably, like, Schlarb, Emerson, even like, just so you know, I had Kernohan was my maiden name. So, that's a name. So I think for all of them, it would say yes.
Yeah. So for people listening, if I were standing there with my feet together and I said, my name is Fred, but I would say body, my name is Fred. Once I've clarified what a yes looks like, my body would probably do a no if I said my name is Fred. So then what you do is you take the yogurt out of the fridge and you hold the yogurt before your belly with your feet together and you go, body, would you like to eat this right now? And it'll either lean forward or lean back, depending on what the yes or the no is. I'm just over explaining it for people who maybe don't know. Cool. Okay, so Maggie Emerson, let's go in your records, shall we? Okay, the reception's so bad, I'm going to hang up and come back. I'll be back. So I'm sorry, it was breaking up so bad I couldn't hear you, my love. Margaret something something.
Margaret Elizabeth, very queen-like.
Not queen-like.
Like the Margaret Elizabeth into a little wave.
I'm even asking energetically, and it's like, no, they want me to use Schlarb for whatever reason. And I should ask this sometimes in the records, but when they train you how to read the Akashic records, they teach you that you always open the records with the person's legal name as it shows up on their driver's license today.
Like government name? That seems so strangely.
It seems like anti-organic. You know, but I do find sometimes, and it's not every time, which is also weird, that if I use the not in the license name, we get weird shit go on. So I'm like, all right, I surrender. Like, whatever, this thing is what this thing is. And maybe not, but that's how it is for me now. Okay. So, all right, off we go. And we will get you out of here on time, Maggie. Herbert Cassidy, I hope, will help me with that because I'm going to be in another dimension. Okay, so we're going to close our eyes just for a moment. Just for the purpose of bringing our full attention to the inner realities. And we'll take a couple breaths into the low belly. Speaking of the body, consciously intending to connect with our emotional centers, our heart, our low belly, allowing the breath to drop low in the body. So filling the low belly with air as you inhale, and really allowing the low belly to expand as air enters and kind of collapse as air leaves. Relaxing consciously the chest and the shoulders so that we don't breathe shallowly, but we breathe deep in the belly. Okay, and I don't even need to do anything else with you. I can just open from here. So let's keep breathing in the belly because your relationship is so integrated and grounded with yourself and the beyond and the body. If you like, send a grounding cord from the base of your spine about a foot and a half wide to the center of the earth and see coming up through that grounding cord a river of light from the earth contributing to your body. And see it flowing up into the first chakra and then flowing down through each hip, quad, glute, hamstring, knee, calf, shin, ankle, foot. And then see that river of light flowing down through a structure of roots that extend below each foot. 500 roots from each foot extend hundreds of miles into the earth. And that river of light that flowed up through our grounding cord and down through our legs flows down now into those roots below the feet. Giving us a nice tripod grounding structure here, connecting to the body, connecting to the earth. And so as we surrender to what is, and we feel into what is with ourselves, simultaneously, we do acknowledge the forces of light I mean, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, protect me from all forms of self-centeredness, please. Direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know Margaret, Elizabeth, technically Schlarb, in the light of the Akashic Records. Help me to see Margaret, Elizabeth, Schlarb through the eyes of the Lords of the Records, and enable me to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of Margaret, Elizabeth, Schlarb have for Margaret, Elizabeth, Schlarb. And I'll go quiet for just a second. Okay, and as we deepen into the Akashic Records and the energetic alignment of Margaret Elizabeth Schlarb with her Akashic Records, I'm just asking that anything and everything in the way for herself or me of her receiving the clearest, truest, most vibrationally resonant guidance and direction and energetic healing, should that be required, be cleared. Anything in her field or mind that would stand in the way of clarity, truth, and healing showing up in this session today, we ask for that to be released, cleared, uncreated, destroyed, dissolved, sent to the light. And if you would indulge me for just a moment, Maggie, there's one little piece here they want to attend to, and then I'd like to check in with you about whatever you'd like to look at, which is if you could just feel into for just a moment the brainstem at the back of your neck, where the brain, the ganglia of the brain, drop down into the back of the neck and meet up with the spinal column. We'll just kind of bring our energetic awareness there for a second. Okay, well, that was easy. It's almost like there was just a tiny bit of holding and tension there. And then they want me to share this information. One is, you know, for the average bear, the average human mammal, a lot of our stuck emotional energy gets crystallized back here in the back of the neck. And it sort of like the way crystals form in the earth, they get hard and jagged. Those stuck emotions that don't get processed get crystallized back here in the back of the neck. And for a second there, I thought we were going to do a clearing of that area, but it cleared so quickly that then they sort of gave me this awareness of like, that for you, there's a little habitual, it's very small. You'll have a tiny bit of tension and you'll go like, ooh, we clamped down in the back of the neck. And then you'll sort of become aware of it and stop doing that. And so it was really easy to just move it. But it's just like one of those little habitual things. Like I do it in my shoulders and my jaw, you know. We all have our places where we do that. So that was just A, for the listeners to understand how the crystallized emotions work in the back of the neck, and B, just, oh, look how quick and easy that was. And so where would you like to begin? What questions do you have for your record keepers? Anything you'd like to clear? Anything you'd like to understand?
I would love, one of my questions is, if there anything I need to know business-wise to get, I just, to support the people that I know I'm here to serve and support.
Okay. Is there anything you need to know business-wise in order to reach more people?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. So can you, for me, feel into your, feel into your heart center and imagine a line of energy that comes from above your head, down through the crown, all the way down to the heart, and then flows forward out of the body like an L shape, like the letter L. And see that line of energy from forward from the heart, up through the crown. I don't know where this is taking us yet, but I'm going to follow it because it's here. And we're asking the divine light, that mother, father, all that is, the Christ light, any light beings that serve Maggie's highest good, her higher self, her body, etc., to facilitate this, whatever that is, that L-shaped block or limitation or illusion or lie. Whew. And as that is moving, if you could become aware of the back of your neck as well. And this is just the energy of an old belief that, you know, you're very aware of and attuned to what your beliefs are, where you habitually go to, you know, whatever beliefs you go to. But this is the energy of it, from the heart up through the crown. Now, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu anna Muhammad Abduhu Rasulullah. You have to give me 20 seconds. I apologize. I'll be right back in 20 seconds. Okay. Okay. All right. And then now we're going to bring our full attention to the heart center for just a moment. Oh, any tightness or holding or tension you might be aware of there, even if it's the subtlest little wisp of one, let's just bring our energetic awareness to that right in the center of the chest. There may be more conscious words about this in a minute. So your energy field, from my experience of it, this is just what I experience, right? It's like a, how would you say that? Like a, it's like so fast and light, like, I don't even know what a metaphor would be for that. It's just so fast and light that the moment I say, would you bring your attention to your heart? So much starts to move right away by you giving the love of your attention. You know, they say in certain teachings that love is just attention. Like anything you pay attention to, you're loving it. Because, you know, how like if you sing to a flower or you sing to a plant, it grows. Similarly, if we pay attention to the heart, whatever is in there that might be not serving us can just move just by being attended to. And this, some of this too is like, I'm trying so hard, I'm doing so much. What? And there's a kind of clamping down that can happen around that. So all we're doing is softening that place and opening that place. So that when you make the energetic request of the universe or the prayer, depending on which words you prefer, you can receive into the heart, which is the portal between the other dimensions and this one, the heart, so that you can receive the gifts that are being given from the universe into your 3D life. We want to make the heart soft and open. And when it has anxiety and is tight, it can't receive and it can't be a portal that is halfway between the other realms and this one. So just staying with the heart. Yeah, and now there's a connection between the heart down to the low back. So through the midline, if you could feel into the connection of the heart. So the heart and then through the solar plexus and then down to the womb and then to the low back. So it goes straight down and then back again, kind of like an L shape, like the letter L. Allah, and we'll be just aware of that line of energy. Allah, Allah, we'll bring a bunch of light to that. And all you have to do is just feel whatever's there. Allah, 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 interesting. Allah, we'll say words in a moment. Allah, 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 feeling into that whole line from the heart all the way down to the first chakra, now the pelvic floor, the root, the genital space. Yeah.
much.
Okay. And then Maggie, what are you aware of that's happening in your body anywhere at all as we're doing any of this right now?
Well, I can feel intensity in my heart.
Yeah.
And then just as you say, like, where to go, it feels like the way I see it, it's like clouds moving. Like there's, you know how clouds shift and move?
Yes.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, okay. Okay, got it. That makes sense to me. So they want to give some words now to what some of that was, what we're doing here and what the practice might be going forward. And it's interesting because this is some of what came up when we did the group thing a while back. Mm-hmm. Sort of like they showed to me like you, because you understand so much and you know so much and you are so capable and competent, all of which are positive qualities for a human to have, there's a way that you can take too much responsibility for what needs to be done in the doing realm. And it's not horrible or huge, it's subtle actually, and it builds on itself for you. So like, let's say on a Monday, you'll take a little too much responsibility for what has to be done in the doing realm, and it creates a tiny, tiny little holding in your, say, your third chakra, the low back, the mid belly, wherever. And then you don't, you receive and you're open. And then the next day you take a tiny bit too much responsibility and it creates a little bit of a tightness in the back of the neck. And then before you know it, you know, I don't know, 10 or 12 days have gone by and there's this real tight pull through the middle of you. And you're doing everything right and doing everything good. And then going, well, I don't get it. Why isn't it flowing as well as it could? And it's flowing. It's not flowing. It's just like, you know, it could be flowing better, like pipelines, like pipes in a house that just have no rust versus pipes in a house that have some, a little bit of like stuff in there that makes it harder for the water to flow through. And so the practice every day, if we were to give you one, if you were inclined to receive these words, would be something along the lines of like, tune into the midline from the root, you know, the genitals up through the middle of you, up to the, all the pieces, step by step, second chakra. And if you don't like chakra words, you know, womb and then belly button and then solar plexus and heart and upper chest and throat and center of the head and crown, top of the head. We would say, drop into that midline, find a way to connect to that midline. Notice every single place that is holding tight or contracting in any way through the midline, and consciously bring your love to it and your attention and give it permission to soften and give it permission to open. And when you can't, because you are human and human beings, by the way, a lot of people don't like this idea. Human beings are meant to be dependent on God. And I know that sounds very religious and that can trigger a lot of people, but we are actually meant to be in a dialogue continually with the divine forces, okay, or the conscious will of the universe, such that we are meant to need it like a child needs a mother, like your son suckled on your teat. We are meant to need to suckle on the teat of the divine every day, many times a day. But we don't like that because we're competent and intelligent and we run shit. So we feel weak and sad and pathetic sometimes, not all of us, not all the time, but sometimes if we think we need anything. And so it's almost like the request, the dream would be, would you be willing, Maggie, through the midline of you, three times a day, for 2 minutes tops each time, feeling into that midline, say, I give all of this to you and I need your help. I open to receive what you have to give me through this midline. And just sit there and feel and practice opening, surrendering, and receiving. Last piece. It's like your field is so good at receiving from the left and right, up and down, from all these directions, except through that midline. In the center line, some part of you says, I got this. I'm fucking good. Thanks very much. And there's almost a way that you go, I have to maintain some level of fucking control here because I'm so goddamn open anyway. Like, I better like do something. And that creates a kind of tightness through the midline that is the place where you can't receive. Now, that doesn't mean your mental thought with that idea is incorrect. Yes, of course, you have to show up for certain things. What's incorrect is the energetic holding of the midline as tight or contracted in any way ever. And when we say incorrect, of course, we say it with no judgment. We say it as like, it just doesn't work as well. You understand?
Yeah.
Okay. Does any of this make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Your 8-minute warning.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions or follow-ups on that or anything?
I don't really like, I feel like it's a whole other thing, but I'm gonna
ask. That's fine. Yeah.
Like love life. Say anything about that?
If you could frame a question for me, that'd be great. Specific.
What do I get to heal around relationship?
Okay. In order to create one that works, I assume, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, interesting. Okay. This is about slowing down at the beginning. That's it. Interestingly, it's also about the thing we just talked about, the midline. In other words, receipt practice, if you could, receiving awareness about who you're at dinner with through your midline. There's a bit of a defensive holding pattern there in the midline, mid, right to the center there, that says, you know, I don't know, something like, I've got to have my own back. And so it has a tightness, though, that means you're not accurately perceiving who's in front of you on the first date, and then on the second date, and then on the third date. And they say, slow down and feel. Now, interestingly, you're aware of this concept, but we'll highlight it now and say, your body may want someone, but your soul may not. Or your body may temporarily be fine with someone, but your alignment to the all that is, or your being, or your soul, whichever words you like better, your higher self says, I know who that guy's gonna be in 6 months. But if you move a little too quickly at the beginning, you can't hear that. It takes time at the beginning to really see clearly. So working on this same midline practice will facilitate more of this, and slowing down at the beginning. And number three is, anytime you ever again say to yourself, oh, I shouldn't be so judgmental. I shouldn't be so quick to decide. What do I know about him? You know a lot more about men and the tendencies of the ones who don't mean well than you give yourself credit for. So the only truth is, there healing required? No. The only requirement is the practice of trusting that small tiny hit you get that says, he seems kind of like a narcissist. Oh, I shouldn't be so. Yes, you should. Which brings us back to something interesting we talked about before you came on today. We were talking about the lower self and the higher self. We were talking about, well, whatever we were talking about, but what they're saying here is the lower self is an excellent companion on a date. Because the lower self says, motherfucker, I sniff you out. I see what's happening here. Do you see? Maggie?
Kind of. Like the lower self has like the, almost as if it has the judgment, but the knowing. Is that?
Yeah, you think it's judgment, but it isn't.
Okay.
And the reason you think it's judgment is because it comes with something like, I don't like how he smells, or I don't like how he looked at that waitress. But then you'll say to yourself, don't judge him. Mm-hmm. And what we're saying is, you're not actually judging him. You know his shiftiness. You know his shiftiness. You just frame it as if you're judging.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Does that make sense? Or no?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Is there something, what else would you like to say about that? Or what else is in your field about that? Clarity, more, what else do you have there? Is there anything that comes up in response to what I'm saying?
No, just my inner self going, oh, I have to go and do the inner work, like the sitting with myself, that's all. I mean, I love it. I love doing the inner work, but the whole sitting with myself is probably the hardest thing, like that sit down and be still.
You mean the thing they said for 2 minutes a day, three times? Okay, well, you know.
I'm just being honest.
No, I'm not judging you, and I'm not saying don't do it. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm saying, you know, look, you're getting off so easy compared to what I had to fucking do and what a lot of people have to do that I work with. Like, you are getting off so easy. And yes, of course, be honest. Of course. I'm just sharing back that, like, I promise really soon, 2 minutes, three times a day is going to feel like nothing. And in fact, if you do it, you're going to start to crave it, you know?
Yes.
You're really going to start to crave it. It feels so good. It's so nourishing. Yeah. No, but I really understand, because the sitting with the self is always the part none of us want to do. Every single time we're on this podcast and Cassidy goes, time to get in the records, I don't want to go into them. And the reason is, when I go into them, I feel more. And I don't want to. And this is what I do all day, and I still don't wanna. So I feel you. Okay, let me see if there's anything else. No. Okay, last thing I'll say is just to reiterate that, you know what would be a great practice? Simple, easy, great practice after date 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Go home after the date and after not sleeping with them. Good luck. That's what they say. Write down with pen or pencil on paper everything that your lower self is saying about them that you're thinking is a judgment, and just write it down. I didn't like how he talked to the waitress. He seemed to look at me weird. He was kind of cranky toward the end, and he drank 8 drinks, and I thought that was weird. You know, whatever. Small things to big things. And just have a list going. Not for the purpose of going like, men are terrible and look at all the terrible things about this man, but to go, so that you have it, so that on date 5, you look back and go, how did I feel on date 1? Oh, right, that thing and that thing and that thing. And then how did I feel after date 5? Oh, actually, I noticed that it's more like this and this and this, or nope, still the same. And they're also saying, this has been said before, this is interesting. If you have a kind of a straight shooting friend, I wish you had one. I wish you knew someone who was kind of direct and straight shooting. Oh, if only there was someone in your life who was a little bit too direct sometimes. You could call them and say, here's what I noticed. Am I making this up? And you could maybe use them as a mirror of the places you can tend to go so high in your higher self that you can't see what the wisdom that the lower self is trying to deliver. And it does, and I'm making jokes like it has to be me. I happen to be someone like that, but there are plenty of people, you know, I'm sure, who could, you know, provide that springboard in that moment.
Katie, can I ask you a clarifying question about that lower self response thing? I think it'll be useful to know. You only gave what we would call like negative examples. The lower self can have other responses too. Are those included in this? Oh, I liked the way he smiled at me. It felt good when he touched my hand. Are those included in this?
In this case, I get a no, because she's good at that already.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're talking, I think maybe lower self is a tricky phrase, but we're talking about the knowing from chakras 3, 2, and 1 down in the low body, where the gut or the belly will say something like, ew, why did he blah, blah, blah. And then we are so trained in this culture to meet, particularly as women, to immediately go like, don't be such a bitch. Why are you being, don't judge him. Like, what? Let him be who he is, whatever, all those versions of what we do there. So then we dishonor everything from the belly down. So I call it the lower self because I think I'm referring to like everything lower in the body. So thank you for the question, because psychologists and psychiatrists and different systems of teaching use that phrase to mean different things. I think Jungians mean it in a different way than I mean it. So thank you for that. Does that help? Is that helpful in any way?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The sound keeps going away. All right, let's close your records because we're at time. Thank you so much. And Maggie, anything last, any other, is that useful? Is this clarifying? Does it help in any way?
This is brilliant. Yes.
Okay, like, great. Okay, great.
Super helpful.
Okay, good. I would want to hang out for another minute if there was anything missing. I don't get anything from here. Glad to hear it on your end. All right, we want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for their love and compassion. I want to thank the lords of the records for their point of view, Holy Spirit of Light for all knowledge and healing, all the teams of light that facilitated here today, all of Maggie's teams and her higher self and her body and her star beings and star family that contributed quite magically. I say you return all of Margaret Elizabeth Schlarb's energy to herself now, please. I ask you return her to her complete human or non-human wholeness. The divine portal and the Akashic Records for Margaret Elizabeth Schlarb are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic Records for Margaret Elizabeth Schlarb are now closed. Amen. Divine portal and the Akashic Records for Margaret Elizabeth Schlarb are now closed. Amen. 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 There's something I always get this, like when I'm closing someone's records, there's always this last little, not always, but 9 times out of 10, last little nugget of info. And they're like, really, pardon me, validating, Maggie, the idea that like you have really strong star being connections. You probably know that, right? And we didn't spend it enough. Next time if you come back, or if we ever, I want to find out who and which and how they're already working. There's just so much there. Like your field to me is so the field of what I would call a star being or someone who has a star family that they're working with. Like not everybody has that. So it's such a treat for me because it's like such a light kind of energy. Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting me be inside your soul.
Thank you.
And thank you, Cassidy. I love you so much. Thank you for your questions and your timekeeping, even though I harass you about it. I appreciate it. I really do.
Do all your right, work. Makers.
Yeah, thanks for being here with us. We'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Thanks, Maggie.
Thank you.
Bye.
What are you asking for? All of the answers. Say what? All of the answers. Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @AllAnswersPod. Thank you.
I'm going to move this chair and it's going to be loud, Desmond. I'm sorry.
We don't have to include that.
That was a Sounds Awesome production.